primarily what we're going to see is perhaps more of what we've had to date, in that in this last year we've established effective networks in 8 out of the 10 New South Wales regions, and that we're going to see in the next year or so a greater strengthening of those regions. We've now got regional councils operating. Those regional councils are linking local groups. And if we can overcome, particularly in country regions, the massive distances, the cost of travel, the cost of communication, and the isolation of people with disabilities, I'm looking forward to a much stronger network within the disabled people's movement covering the whole state.
So you see as one of the important directions that DPI would go is to coordinating disabled people throughout the whole of the state as being an important area?
Yes, I think that's particularly important. A year or so ago, we would have really only been able to claim an effective network within Sydney, so that we were not representing the opinions of a broad spectrum of people with disabilities. We're now, I believe, more in the position, and we will become even more so, in the position of being able to present a consensus of the opinions of people with disabilities about government programs, about services in the community, and about the rights of people with disabilities.
Fiona, as far as information is concerned, how do you see things changing or developing?
I think primarily, Bronwyn, I see information going out to other people taking responsibility for information dissemination. We being almost like a core and a basis where people can check it up. But one of the instances I've seen this recently was in Wagga, where there's a DPI regional council, and they've got an information system on computer, which they've been working at for quite some time. And their information regarding equipment was in fact far more up to date than ours, because we would rely on centres like the Independent Living Centre and technical aids for disabled people. Whereas because of their isolation, they've had to start it themselves. And I think that's one thing that I'd look forward to, is seeing that happen throughout New South Wales, so that people don't... I mean, because the lack of information in the country regions is profound. I mean, it's really obvious. The other thing I think is we see the information service taking up a much more issue in conjunction with the rest of DPI, issue-orientated areas, and also because the direction of community services at present is towards information and consumer involvement, and that for consumers to be involved in services and to start learning how, you know, well, deciding what they want from services, there needs to be information. So I see that that's where we come in again.
So you see that you are being involved as far as changing in, as far as you would then be a centre for major information collation, but that the individual local groups would also have an important role as far as information dissemination.
I think there's an important point too here about information, that information is not just a passive process. It's not just us telling people what is, but it's a two-way process. And this is where the whole of the DPI network becomes important, because we can say, for instance, housing. We can say to people, well, look, here is what housing is. We can then go a step further and say, here are some of the options of what housing might be. And then there's a feedback from disabled people across the state saying how they want to see it happen. And that information is a flow back, which we can then pass on, say, to the Ministry of Housing or to private housing developers, saying that people with disabilities have this kind of a requirement. And that, of course, generates another flow of information out and another flow of information back, so that we've got to develop the ability to do this, to have that feedback.
What do you see as the limitations at present placed on the development of such a scheme?
Well, there's the obvious one, dollars. I mean, it costs money to operate an information network. When you're talking about the regional councils, you're talking about people who are operating completely voluntarily, and they've got to cover distances. Almost every phone call is an STD call for people in the country. So you're talking about that sort of a problem. You're talking about manpower problems. I don't believe these are insurmountable, but they are just hurdles that we've got to keep overcoming.
Where do you see some of the funding then coming from?
I would hope that in addition to government funding, that we can start tapping corporate dollars, that we can get money from the business community, that we can get money generally from the community, not in that sort of typical charitable model of, you know, help the poor people who can't help themselves, but rather in terms of, look, people with disabilities are already helping themselves, they are achieving what we need is a bit of a kick on. And I think there are definite advantages in being able to tap some non-government funding. But in addition, of course, we're going to have to keep leaning on governments, even though they do tell us how tight the economy is, and keep requiring that if these services are valuable, they should be funded.
One of the issues that you raised, Fiona, was that of becoming more issue-oriented. I'm wondering, do you see DPI as being an important lobby group?
Yes, absolutely. I think that it has a uniqueness amongst the community sector of being, and particularly with people with disabilities, of being being run by people with disabilities, and that the membership is made up of people with disabilities. So I think it's an organisation, because of that, that can give a much more accurate assessment and therefore demand of what people with disabilities want, unlike organisations which are made up of people more removed from the area of disability, or people who are professionals in the area of disability but maybe not, or not even in the area, but and not necessarily aware of the fact that we have we've come a long way. It's now 1985, but there's still a lot long, you know, I mean, there's still more steps, there's still further to go.
How do you feel that we disabled people can gain the skills to become an important pressure group, to become an important lobby group? Because that's a very skilled area.
One of the things that I think the area of development that DPI's looking at the moment, and the development officer is assessing, is looking at skills workshops. Through LinkUp, when we find out about organisations that are running relevant courses and that are accessible to people with disabilities, we'll advertise them. I think it's, again, something that we have to do, which is to say, OK, well, if we are going to be a lobby group, we have to be able to provide the information again on how you do it, and then the real skills and maybe role plays. But again, it comes down to staffing and finances.
So that some of those areas that Laurie was talking about in last week's interview about developing skills would actually be one of the new directions in which you'd see things going.
Well, I think it's not solely and wholly information's area, but I think this is one of the things in DPI New South Wales, is that they are intangible. I mean, they cross over all the time. But it's part of us giving people information is for them to be able to use it. They're going to need the skills. And that's where Laurie's idea of getting skills workshops and short ones, we're not expecting people with disabilities to go through a 4-year academic course. You can do it quite simply in short courses, and I think here is a place where we could start.
I was going to say, I think there's another area too, Bronwyn, and that's the one of assertiveness on the part of people with disabilities. Somebody during 1981 in the Melbourne newspapers wrote an article that was headed "Shut Up and Be Grateful." And I really believe that for many people with disabilities, that's what they've been conditioned to, you know, shut up and be grateful for what you get. Mm. And I think one of the strong messages that DPI has to say to people with disabilities is, look, you do have rights. You have the right to the same quality of services that the rest of the community gets. And don't just shut up and be grateful. Jump up and down. If you feel you're not getting your fair share, you have every right to do something. And we have to encourage. And it's not just stirring for stirring's sake. It's really encouraging people to speak up when they feel that they're being disadvantaged. And bearing in mind that governments obviously listen to the, they listen to the most persuasive voices. We need to encourage people with disabilities to be persuasive about the things that they see as their rights.
So that what you're saying is you'd like to see a continuing development of people with disabilities speaking out and in fact becoming more vocal. So it's really a continuation of the way you've been going now, but in a more organised way, with more skills available to us.
Too right.
Yes. I think one of the other things that shouldn't be should be mentioned here is that disability crosses all groups. It crosses all classes and all groups, such as ethnic groups and so forth. And it's these groups too that have developed skills. And it's again something that we can start looking at, which is tapping in to other organisations so that we don't necessarily have to start from scratch. But there are organisations out there with the ability to either pass on the skills or a lot of information that we can also use and that we could work together on. And this has been proved before, where we've worked with the Combined Pensioners Association, but that's just one of many organisations that we can use their resources and vice versa.
I suppose it'd be like tapping into some of the information and skills that, say, the women's movement have, or
precisely,
that perhaps the Aboriginal movement have as well, that they have been lobbying for a longer period than we have and have got skills and have gained, in fact, legislative and community changes as far as attitudes are concerned and acceptance, the sort of things that we're looking for.
I think that's exactly what an area that we can start now.
So that the changes you would see happening is that the information centres would become more localised, and that the resource centre would become a core for the whole of the information dissemination. I think, Neil, you were talking in terms of the difference between being a retailer and being a wholesaler as far as information is concerned. Perhaps you could expand on that idea.
Well, the feeling I have is that at the moment much of our effort, a good amount of our time, is taken up actually handling the shopfront inquiries, the people who phone in direct to us to seek information. Now, if we could move that information out into the local communities so that instead of people having to come to 5DOC or ring 5DOC to obtain information, they could go to the same source of information in the community that everybody else in the community does, and that we could become the party feeding that information to those points, it would serve two purposes. Firstly, it'd be more convenient, and secondly, it's integrating people with disabilities into the community so that a local housing information service would have information for people with disabilities. It then means that other people using that service also think about disability issues. So it's spreading the awareness as well as localising the information.
So we've been looking at the directions in which DPI is likely to go as far as information and as far as changing from being just small groups that meet of disabled people who can share ideas to becoming a powerful lobby group, perhaps in the future a very important lobby group, to the changes in information from a centralised to a localised thing. What else do you think that DPI really needs?
Well, it needs members. It needs people to direct DPI's direction and have an involvement in and a say in where they want to see an organisation that represents all people with disabilities, every disability, where they want to see it going.
Okay, so what we're asking for then is for all of our listeners to join, and they can get membership forms from DPI here at the Resource Centre. Fiona, perhaps you could give the telephone number that people can ring.
713-1103. And if they ring us, we'll send out membership forms and a little bit of it and some information about DPI and probably a newsletter.
You In that interview, Bronwyn Moy was speaking to Neil Sleep, who's the Executive Officer of DPI New South Wales, and Fiona Strawn, the Information Coordinator, also at DPI, about the future of DPI in New South Wales. That was the final program in the series on DPI. Next week, we'll be starting a new series which looks at the many services for disabled people. While Bronwyn was at DPI headquarters speaking to Fiona Strawn in the previous interview, she took the opportunity to ask Fiona about the taxation seminar held recently by DPI New South Wales. Bronwyn asked Fiona why taxation is so important to disabled people.
Well, primarily because it's an issue for all working people with disabilities, and especially with the use of equal opportunity, equal employment opportunities. This should be applied to taxation as well. And one of the areas that we looked at over the weekend was Section 51 of the Taxation Act, which is an area which allows or enables people in private businesses and also people in much more executive type positions to claim a lot of things such as transport or the use of a car when they put in their tax submission. However, people with disabilities cannot claim the use of transport to or from work. They cannot claim parking costs. And a lot of we have this inequality where people can, individuals can claim the use of a Rolls Royce as part of their employment or a necessary part of their work, whereas a person with a disability who at this stage of the game is probably on a lesser income, a lower income than these people with Rolls Royces, cannot claim basic necessities that require him or her to be able to work, which is getting to or from work.
I think that the taxation department says that this is a private expense, don't they? And the difference is that the other people claim it actually through a company, you know, that they, it's in, the car is actually owned by the company.
Yes, also self-employed people can do it under their own name, but it's actually an interpretation of a very old act by the courts. What we're talking about is characterisation, and I can give you an example, which would be a person in years and years ago usually lived, like say a blacksmith, lived at his or her work. So they weren't, they didn't have this travelling. This concept of people with disabilities travelling to or from work is new, and the courts, the Taxation Act is so solid and so old and so archaic that it is really hard to change. What we're looking at is that what has happened in the past, ministers have said, okay, well, we'll refer the benefit, they're seeing it as a benefit, to the Department of Social Security, and you can, you know, somewhere along the line, someone will draw up yet another benefit, which is not what people with disabilities want, because we're aware that the welfare budget is already overstrained and inadequate. And this is part of, if people are to be treated equally and participate in the community equally, there has to be some kind of amendment to Section 51. Now, a lot of people sit before 1981, a lot of people have taken judicial action, like gone to the courts and taken individual action, and still to no avail. Mm. And we feel that it's now 1985, the taxation summit is going to be somewhere where an event that every person and their proverbial dog is going to be at and have their own issue. We're going to try and get between now and July, people with disabilities informed on as much as possible about the Taxation Act and areas that are relevant to them, and also areas which are relevant to all people, not just people with disabilities, and see if we can present a paper and a good enough argument down at the Tax Summit in July.
So actually, you are going to be present at the Tax Summit and
well,
be presenting
a paper? Well, we haven't actually got down to that details, but what we're trying to do is at least get the information together. I know DACA is, which is the Disability Advisory Council of Australia, is going down there. I think it's important that New South Wales make an effort, and also DPI National particularly, make an effort to be present there. One of the ideas, or several of the ideas that came up on the weekend was, okay, what to do in the meantime? What about people with disabilities out in the community who don't want to submit a particular paper or anything to the tax summit, but however want to start, you know, want to feel that they want to be involved. One of what we discussed was what we can do in the meantime to raise public awareness and also politicians' awareness about our concern about this particular section of the Act, because I believe personally that if we do not change it, or we do not get some commitment to amendments in July, it will stay and we won't have another tax summit, and our opportunity to change it will lapse. Well, the first one was that the DPI New South Wales, in conjunction with DPI National, was to raise a, get a higher public profile. Between May the 26th and June the 1st is National Pensioner Action Week. So we're going to again combine some efforts with the Combined Pensioners Association and also the New South Wales Council for Social Service, and use that as a way that we can kind of come out publicly on this issue and also as a combined force with other organisations.
What about individuals? What can they do?
Well, deciding, and this will have to be done very, very soon, of a date in which we will let all link-up readers and DPI members know of, and also we'll have to get in contact with you to use your radio program as an opportunity to get out to people too, is that we will ask on a coordinated day that people send in letters to the editor and also letters to relevant ministers, and possibly throughout, by using New South Wales or DPI New South Wales state councillors, is to organise a flood of telegrams. Now, we're going to have to, I mean, this is expensive, so we're going to have to look at hopefully taking on some responsibility of the cost of that, so that a minister's office doesn't just get one or two telegrams dribbling in, but we'd like to see a couple of hundred. Because then the impact of that, especially if you let the media know and you work the two together, will have a lot more than the odd telegram coming in or the odd letter that will just get, you know,
lost
in the system. The other thing we thought of doing was having in the metropolitan area something similar to what we had last year before the federal election, which was a public meeting wherein we invited ministers to give us their stand on disability. And I think we can do a similar thing regarding taxation and not only disability, but maybe come into, I mean, we're looking at income security for all low-income earners as well, of which people with disabilities are often in that group. So it won't be solely and wholly for people with disabilities. I think it's important that it cross, you know, in other areas, because in fact, when you look at taxation, they are all intertwined.
So what you're asking is that people keep their ears open as far as when to take action. Mm. So as a follow-up to our earlier interview, perhaps we can encourage people to join LinkUp, to join DPI, to read LinkUp, and you'll be giving them guidelines as to how we can have the greatest impact on the taxation summit as people with disabilities, as an important pressure group.
Yes. I think also that if people, I think with taxation, it's an issue that for all working people with disabilities, we've got a common ground. And I think even if it's not necessarily a benefit that you or I may claim or get immediately because of an income level, it's important because I see it as part of equal employment opportunities. And I think the two are one. I mean, you can't have one without the other.
Mm. So it's important, if we're going to have equal employment opportunities, to also have equal taxation.
Equal accessibility to taxation.
Right. Well, thank you.